Hello, welcome to Pop Apologists.
Hello, hi Lauren.
We are your hosts, Chan. No, I'm just kidding.
I was like, for a second, I thought, okay, this is great. We're going to do like some sort of serious intro. Like we're getting actually serious about this podcast. We're your hosts. And then it was a joke.
I do feel like we should write some sort of like intro little script that we say every time. That way it's kind of like, I don't know, at least for newcomers, they know what the hell they're getting themselves into.
Right.
Like, hey, welcome to Pop Apologists, where two complete nobodies talk about nonsense. Right. And it's a great opportunity to, you know, waste an hour of your one wild and precious life. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Let's get into it.
I love it. I think that's a great working script.
Thank you. We are recording today an hour late. And Chandler, I texted you and I was like, is this possible?
Yeah, because we are on different timelines, it was like 7 a.m. my time. So I actually woke up at 6:30 because my body, if it knows that I have to wake up early, wakes me up half an hour before I actually have to get up. So then you texted me about 5 minutes before we were supposed to record.
I know. But I did ask. I fully asked and I would have not, you know, postponed if you said, no, I need to record now. No, I want to give that caveat.
You totally did. And I'm honestly not stressed about it.
You're so nice. You generously were like, it's cool. We can record in an hour. Because the reason why I tell this story is because, as you know, I think I talked about on the Patreon, but Kagan and I are looking for a place to buy in Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. And the housing market here is – it's like warfare. It's not even like a marketplace. It's literally a battleground. I guess figuratively a battleground. There aren't actually weapons. But
that's good to hear.
But literally, Chandler, the like friends here do not share real estate agents. They do not tell people.
It's cutthroat.
It's super cutthroat. They don't tell people about listings they know about. Like it is the competition is so extreme. Like,
That's why you had to like literally go like under the cover of darkness.
Well, because and we went to go look at two places that came online this morning.
Yeah.
And Kagan was like, we have to go now. We have to go now. We cannot wait. Like, we
pack
have to
a bag.
Go.
Let's go. It's so funny.
Well, and it's just so dark too because everything is so expensive. And then you go look at it and you're like, oh, this has 8-foot ceilings. It actually feels like we're in a doll's apartment.
So, yeah.
Not a human beings.
How were the two places this morning?
Okay. One is amazing, but it needs to be fully renovated.
Okay, we'd love to hear that.
It almost looks like it has structural problems.
It's like, once we redo it, it will be amazing.
Once we rebuild the entire place, you're going to love it.
Okay.
And then the other place, you know, it was oceanfront, which is obviously amazing. Definitely at the top end of our budget.
Yeah.
We walk in. Literally 8-foot ceilings. I mean, you can place your hand in the air, go on your tippy toes. Me, I do a little bounce and I'm touching the ceiling.
What in the world? Why? Is it like, are there multiple levels?
Yeah, it's like an apartment building on the beach. And I think they tried to maximize the number of units. Wow. Clearly. So anyway.
Wow. Well, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I'm sorry. But, you know, I've also been combing through decaying listings myself for New York. And I don't know what it is, but like everything that's listed on Craigslist is literally looks like it's like the scene of a homicide.
Totally.
I don't know what it is. Like they don't try at all to just like, can you just like, if you spent 10 minutes decluttering, I would pay double what you're asking.
It's like they don't even clean their room before taking photos.
I don't get it. Like it's really bad, or it's just like, or it's just totally like a lie. I'm like, just move the junky mail off the counter. Like just do that one thing.
Right.
So yeah, we're both in similar situations.
Yeah, it's just wild. But at least for you, it's a rental, and it's not like you're actually buying this place.
Oh yeah, no, I can't imagine. So but I mean, there is something about paying $2,000 for a month of rent that you're just like, wow, I'm really going to pay $2,000 for this closet.
Oh, because it's a short term rental, right?
Yeah,
it's like a 2 month type of deal.
I'm coming to terms with actually how expensive it is, and it's like not going to be my summer of saving money that I positioned it to myself as.
Well, that's the thing about short-term rentals is you always think, oh, it's the same as rent. No, it's like three times the price of rent.
Yeah.
Like to Airbnb something.
That's why, once again, I would like to put a call out to the listeners. If anyone who lives in New York knows of anyone who lives in New York who just wants to leave for a month and give me their room, let me know.
Or maybe you have a roommate or, yeah, you know.
If they're, yeah, if somebody you know is going to rehab soon or something. Yes. You know, someone is like in a toxic relationship, they need to get out of the city. Like, I'm happy to take over in those situations. Happy to prey upon people who are vulnerable.
Mm-hmm, for sure. One man's misfortune is another man's treasure.
Summer of love. Yeah.
Okay. So what's going on with you?
I'm currently at mom's house.
Yes.
Because great. So I went to Palm Springs this weekend. I was celebrating one of my best friend's birthdays, and I like got to see a lot of like old friends. It's actually great because the last time I saw all these friends was like on New Year's before COVID. So now everyone, you know, everyone's hashtag vaccinated and celebrating together. I just have to put that out there. You know, you never know what people are going to say.
That's true.
Are you grateful though, that I didn't post like a line of stories that were like, we got tested before we came. Everyone here is continuing to get tested. We're totally safe. We're wearing masks.
Like, no, because I could have made fun of you privately with Kagan and like, you know, very much enjoyed that for the entertainment value.
I'm glad that we're just like past those days a little bit where we can just like assume that the people are hopefully assume that the people who are like traveling for leisure are vaccinated.
Right. Exactly.
And we're no longer in like the, I have to post so many like stories explaining myself behavior.
Totally.
Yeah. So it was really fun, but I was going to fly home like literally the day after the weekend on Monday, but I got a little bit guilted into coming home for Mother's Day, changing my flight, eating the cost.
Yes, you did. I was part of the guilting party, wasn't I?
Yeah, you were part of the guilting party. There was a small tiff about it, but I'm glad I did because I got to come home and have crab legs.
Oh,
so instead of eating ground turkey in San Francisco, I got to have, you know, actually delicious food. Yeah, it's been very nice. And Dad's like, you know what? We're in the presence of a pop apologist.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
And I've also found out some of our other family members, some of our uncles listened to this.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Like
Uncle,
who?
Uncle Carrie told mom that he listened. So Uncle Carrie, if you're listening, hello.
Greetings, Uncle Carrie. Wow, that's actually shocking information.
I know, isn't it crazy? It's kind of amazing.
Was there any explanation for why they're listening?
I think he listened to the episode with Dad on it, which I want to say, everybody loves the episode with Dad.
Yeah,
like, not that I'm surprised, but like it is funny because it was just kind of a random thing we decided to do out of nowhere. And he killed it. Everyone's like, please have your dad back on to talk about Kim and Kanye's divorce.
I know. We honestly need to have him on, especially to talk about the breakdown of Belinda.
Yeah, right.
We did get that request.
I know. So anyways, okay. So, but I have to tell you about my journey to Palm Springs really quick.
Oh yeah, please.
So there's no direct flights from SFO to Palm Springs. And usually I would just drive there, but I don't have a car anymore. So it's fine. I decided I was going to fly. And my flight situation ended up getting totally screwed up. I was supposed to fly out of San Francisco at like 7, have a little quick 45-minute layover in Salt Lake, then fly to Palm Springs. Okay. Mm-hmm. Supposed to be kind of a long night of traveling, but I was going to get there, you know, the first night of the festivities. Well, my flight out of SFO got delayed, and then it got delayed like while I was in the like waiting in the gate. Then it got delayed while I was on the tarmac.
No. And so you're on the plane while it's delayed.
I'm on the plane, and they're like, "Well, some of the paperwork's not right, folks. So it's going to be, you know, a couple more minutes." And it's just like, "What? Like, do we need to wait for someone to print something off of some printer in like, you know, the Delta Help Center or whatever?" Anyway. So my flight, and so like,
is the plane like heating up too?
The plane's like heating up, and like everyone, you can just hear the collective like, ugh.
Yeah.
So come to find out, that particular plane and like slew of flights had been late all day because there was like air traffic or whatever that means. Also, I don't understand why there would be ever air traffic. Like, none of the other conditions change. I mean, I guess weather, but I guess whatever. Big whoop.
Oh, like there's too much traffic in the air?
Yeah, like I guess probably if the conditions are worse, like landing the planes is a little bit harder maybe. I guess.
It just seems like something they could prevent, you know?
Right, it just seems totally preventable.
Why don't they put us in charge of air traffic control?
I know. So anyway.
Globally.
Yeah, be really great. Can like barely get it together to like record twice a week.
We're like, where does what's a USB-C again?
Right.
Yeah. You definitely want us in charge of that.
So anyways. Long story short, I end up realizing that I'm going to miss my connecting flight. And I've never had, I don't like travel for work all the time. Like I'm barely an adult. Okay. So this is a new situation for me to like And I'm like, I don't know what to do. Like, I have nowhere to go. And I'm like, I have some friends in Salt Lake, but I was like, maybe I'll like text Chloe Bruderer. And then I have a friend, Jess, who knows Ben, and she was going to let me stay with her. But I'm like, I guess I'm just going to have to spend the night and get on a new flight in the morning. Long story long, basically, I end up getting a flight credit from Delta or a hotel voucher from Delta.
What is that experience
like? I know. I'm like, what? A free night? Free night stay? It's not pleasant, I'll tell you that much, because I get off the plane and I like mosey on down to the counter and I'm followed by like 50 other pissed off guests because everyone had a connecting flight. Like to other parts of like California. So they're like, you know, we're like cattle. And like, hey, here's your flight voucher. Call this number. You'll get a shuttle. You're on the next flight out tomorrow morning.
Oh my gosh.
So I literally call the, so I'm like, it's like, you know, 10 p.m. and I call the Sheraton Four Points next to the Salt Lake City airport.
Because is that where they put everyone up?
That's where they put everyone up. And I call and I get the most frantic hotel operator ever. Hotel manager. And I go, hi, I missed my flight. Or my connect Delta wants me to stay with you, whatever. Can you come get me? And then the guy goes, nope. Our shuttle driver's been back and forth there all day. He's done for the night. You're going to have to find your own way here.
You're kidding.
No. No. I was like, okay. So I'm just going to have to like Uber? Yep. And then he promptly hangs up, like slams the phone down.
And oh, I'm like, my gosh.
What's the point of a shuttle other than to go back and forth all day?
Yeah, why is he – that's like complaining about our bus driver has been driving all day. He's done for that.
It was like – it was rude that I was even going to inconvenience him by asking for another ride.
Like it's us being like, listen, we're podcasting every single week. We're done with this.
Don't you dare.
This is the job.
Yeah. So – that was the start of it. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm walking. Oh, and he also goes, also, I've only got a few more rooms. They're going fast. Click.
Oh, are you kidding me?
Not kidding you. So I like scramble to call my Uber. Also, if you know the Salt Lake City airport, it's super big now. Like they've redone it. So like getting from like the B gates to the A gates to like literally baggage claim is like a mile walk, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I finally get in my Uber and I get dropped off at the like hotel. It's literally like in a business park and I walk in and the lobby is just a scene. Okay. The guy in front of me goes, so like I walk in and he's like, so do you have a room? And the guy's like, well, I don't technically, but if I say no, I'm going to get yelled at. Like he's literally just being openly rude to every single guest. Okay. So I'm like just standing there and I'm like, oh, here we go. Also, mind you, he's one of those gentlemen who have a shaved sides, but then a long ponytail. Like his hair is growing from the root, but it is back and it's like red and it's gorgeous. It's a look truly. So then the lobby is just starting to fill up with guests. And he goes, as he sees more people come in, he just out of nowhere, he goes in between actually picking up the phone with people calling and repeating the same spiel that he gave to me. He just announces to the lobby, nothing like when Delta shits all over you, huh?
Stop it. Stop it. Stop it right now. He says those words, and he's like in a uniform.
He says those words in a uniform. Also, there's like Delta, like flight attendants, like literally it's just Brandon was not even playing. Like he woke up and he chose violence.
Oh my gosh. This is the most incredible story I've ever heard.
It was like in a sitcom. Like I actually now feel like I want to write a pilot about like hotel managers, like chain hotel managers, night managers. So then the best part is one of the other employees like on his way out goes, yeah, and we're still getting reservations from hotel tonight. And Brandon's like, do you have a number I can call to shut it down? And the guy's like, no. And then he's like, well, have a good night. Brandon goes, I'll try.
Oh, nothing like when Delta shits all over you.
Yeah. So I finally get a room. It was hilarious to see him pick up the phone and then just literally slam it down. Like he didn't care at all. It was great. I actually want to now call Sheraton and leave him a 5-star review for the entertainment value alone.
I'm actually very curious. Like what? So for me, it just seems like there's either rooms available or they're not available. And so like, it's just like you give the people the rooms first come first serve basis. And then if they're not, it's not like Brandon's like having to build a new hotel within an hour to house people.
Yeah. I'm like, are parts of this hotel being like blocked off or something? Like, do you just keep rooms open? Like it was confusing to me. See,
black and white. Either let people sleep there or they can't. And right. you call Delta and say, sorry, we're full. Like what kind of backdoor shady shit is Brandon into where somehow he wants to like keep basically rooms mm-hmm. open? That's my question.
I think it's just more work for him, you know?
Oh, so do you think it's just like more work checking people in and all that?
Yeah. And I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if some hotel managers were like said they were full because they just don't want to deal with it.
Sometimes you just want a nice, quiet evening right. doing nothing while being paid, you know, right. and I can relate to that.
I love that. I love that experience for myself all the time.
Brandon likes to work soft and so do we.
Yeah. Honestly, I felt very endeared to him after this experience.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Can you believe that though?
So that's amazing.
I luckily got on the flight the next morning, but Brandon is like, it was well worth the journey.
Yes. What time did you actually arrive in Palm Springs?
I actually arrived at like 11 a.m. the next morning.
Okay. And then how long are you actually in Palm Springs?
About 24 hours.
Okay. And you're supposed to be there for 36?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not so bad.
No, it wasn't bad at all.
That one night though.
No, it was all good. And I still ended up like having the great day in the sun. And I just love Palm Springs air. I just love warm air at night.
You're going to love it here, sis. You're going to love Puerto Rico.
I can't wait.
Oh, wow. Well, what a journey. I'm glad you finally made it. Okay. Well, this week we have a very exciting interview, you guys, with Bugsy Drake of Below Deck Med. We are so excited to have interviewed her, and it was such a fun interview. Honestly, go ahead, Jen.
Oh, I was just going to say, she's incredible. She's one of our favorites, not to mention a total fan favorite. We are like so lucky to have had her on the pod.
Yeah, I feel like one of the fun things about interviewing her was like, it wasn't like interviewing a reality, like when we interviewed Deandra, even though it was so amazing, we were kind of a little like more nervous. Mm-hmm. But since Bugsy is more around our age, it was more just like chatting with a friend and getting all the details, like the juicy details that you wanted to know about.
Right.
And we asked a ton of questions. So anyway, it's a really fun interview.
Also, everyone, she has a new book, The Art of Tablescaping. It came out last week. Pick it up. We love her. Support her. She's incredible.
Love her so much. And one more thing before we get to the interview. A very special happy birthday to Chandler. I can't believe we have a listener whose name is this. She sounds like she should be on the cover of Us Weekly, but Lily Blake.
Right. I'm like, I'm sorry. Is this like a starlet? Is this someone who's famous, who follows us, who's actually listening to our podcast?
Totally. Lily Blake, wow. You really scored in the name department. Apparently, you also scored in the hotness department because Lily, fun fact, was actually jogging when her now boyfriend saw her and somehow figured out who she was. I don't know actually how the story went. If he
stalked her. I think they were in high school together or something, or they maybe went to school.
Anyway, apparently he fell in love when he first saw her jogging. The only thing that anyone wants to do when they see me jogging is ask if I need to go to the hospital.
Yeah, I can't even imagine that being my life experience. Also, can we talk about the fact that her boyfriend's name is Hugh? Hugh and Lily? Like, this is straight out of like, I don't know, a novel or something.
Seriously, you would think that these people were A-listers. So anyway, very flattered that you listen, Lily, and wishing you the happiest 23rd birthday. Ugh, to be 23 again. Wow.
I know. Seriously. Rip. Enjoy it while it lasts. Okay, Lily?
It goes fast, baby. happy birthday. And with that, we're going to cut to our interview with Bugsy. Okay, Chandler, are you aware of HelloFresh?
I'm acutely aware of HelloFresh.
HelloFresh is an amazing meal delivery service. They deliver fresh, pre-measured ingredients and mouth-watering seasonal recipes right to your door.
This past week, my boyfriend was here and I was very busy working and he, you know, decided to be my domestic goddess and he made me one of their 25 plus recipes and it was incredible. First of all, not only this, but it was ready in 30 minutes or less. Okay. Which was perfect for me because I was waiting on the food. I want it to be ready ASAP.
Absolutely. Makes sense because HelloFresh has been named Newsweek's most trusted meal kit company of 2021 with over 4 million households served. So listeners, go to HelloFresh.com/12pop and use code 12pop for 12 free meals, including free shipping.
That's right. Go to HelloFresh.com/12pop and use code 12pop for 12 free meals, including free shipping.
Amazing. Bugsy, Bugsy, Pop Apologist.
Pop Apologist, Bugsy, go ahead.
Oh my gosh.
I hope that wasn't as corny.
Oh my gosh, I think it's brilliant.
Good. That was pre-planned. I know that'll come as a shock.
I love it.
Today we are joined by the star of one of our truly like favorite shows on this earth. That is not even an exaggeration. We are obsessed with all things Below Deck and Below Deck Med. And today we are joined by Bugsy Drake of seasons 2 and 5 of Below Deck Med. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Oh my gosh. Well, we are so excited to have you.
It's truly such a dream. Like, it's one thing to like, we're always really grateful to have any sort of guests on our like little podcast, but like to have a guest that is like our favorite character on a show, it's a dream come true.
Amazing. And I'm so excited to hear that you guys are sisters, because I'm really close with my sister too. And her and I like watch Real Housewives of Beverly Hills together. So that's like our Bravo like go-to, other than the Below Decks. And we both work in yachting. So I think it's...
Oh, you do?
I'm really close with my sister too. So it's so much fun to be like on a sister podcast.
Oh my gosh.
We love to hear it. That's so sweet.
Yes. So, so nice. Well, did you know that Below Deck is actually the top rated show on Bravo?
I do. That's so exciting. And it's so much fun to be a part of it.
What's crazy is, and Chen, I don't know if this, you had the same experience, but I kind of always heard about Below Deck, but I didn't start watching it until we had the opportunity to interview you. And I was like, okay, yeah, I would love to interview her. Let's watch the show. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is the best show I've ever seen. My fiance and I literally will watch 7 episodes at a time and be like, it's 3 a.m. We have to go to bed, but we have to see what they're going to do when the fire starts tomorrow. Like, what are we going to do?
So wait, you just started watching it recently?
We watched all of Below Deck Med, like basically in the past like 2 months. Well,
and I actually watched it. I watched it when I was in high school because I would nanny for these people and she would always have it recorded, just regular Below Deck, not Below Deck Med.
Right.
And I remember Captain Lee. Like, I remember loving it then. And then I kind of dropped off and just was only watching Real Housewives for a bit and then got caught up on Mediterranean. And I was like, I've been sleeping on this. Like, literally, it's the most fast paced. Like, the drama is like nonstop every single episode.
Oh my gosh. And that's how it is like in real life. It's just nonstop. We in these like close quarters, like very confined. So you've got all these personalities and it's just like full on 24/7.
It's like this combination of like, yeah, like I feel like it's a combination of like camp and working in a restaurant job, like all at once while simultaneously being filmed on a reality show. Like it's a clusterfuck, for lack of a better word. Excuse my French.
and then you throw in these like super bougie, like over the top guests. It's like a recipe for drama.
It's so good.
We have so many questions. Before we get into the show, we kind of want to bring it back a little bit, learn more about you. Where'd you grow up and how did you get into yachting?
So it's a really funny story. Well, maybe it's not that funny, but to me it kind of is. I grew up in South Africa, so you know, very far away from the place where the whole yachting scene takes place. I think more and more recently, there's been a lot more big yachts that dock in Cape Town in South Africa. But I grew up like in a small coastal town called Ballito, which is in Durban. And yeah, I grew up there. I studied film in Cape Town after I'd finished school. And one of my roomies that I was like sharing a digs with, we call it a digs. I don't know what you guys call it in America, but it's kind of like your little housing establishment when you're studying. She'd finished studying a year before me, and she kind of, someone had kind of said to her, you know, you should get into this yachting world. So she did it just to make some money to travel before getting into the big, wide working world. And when she was doing it, like she had Kate Hudson on her boat and she'd like always, she'd be like cleaning Kate Hudson's bathroom and like cleaning her room because she was in housekeeping. And she was like, you have no idea this world I'm in. I've got these incredible guests on board, like all the rich and famous. And she's like, you have to do it. And I was, I kind of said, there's no way I think I can really see myself, you know, like going from majoring in film to wanting to be like on the whole like film scene to then figuring out maybe I'm going to go and like clean people's bedrooms and bathrooms and kind of, you know, be full on service for all these people. I was like, I don't know if I'm really going to be like up to the task. And she said, well, just do it for a season and try a hand at it and whatnot and see what you think. And then, you know, you can just make some money to travel. And I was like, okay, I'm making the executive decision to fly to France to kind of go and walk the docks because this is how you did it when I started, which was about 9 years ago. A lot of people still do it today. Otherwise, there's agencies you can kind of send your resume into. But
okay.
I basically flew to France with one of my best friends and we had no idea what we were doing. We're like, okay, we did all our courses that you have to do. And it was really funny because before I arrived in France, my passport was stolen out of my bag. So I was in Dubai and we flew into France and I was like, oh my gosh, I don't have a passport. Like, how am I going to get into this country? And as we arrived, I was like taken into the customs and immigration and all the police there were like, I'm so sorry, you don't have a passport to get into the country. We're going to have to send you back on this 12-hour flight back to
Africa. Oh my gosh.
And so I was like, okay, this is where I'm going to use my acting skills from what I'd learned like at university. And I just like started crying and I was like to the police. I was like, oh my gosh, please. Like I'm on holiday here because you couldn't at that point legally like look for a job, right, in France. Mm-hmm. Because I wasn't like, citizen. So I was just crying, like I'm here on holiday. I just want to like eat a croissant and like drink some champagne, and, like, embrace the French culture. And they were like, I was like, this is the first time I've ever been away from home, and I was just crying. And so my dad like, sent a copy of my passport like via email, and these two French customs guys were like, okay, this poor girl is literally here on holiday, like let her in. So they like let me in. It was crazy without a passport. And I was
that's
like,
insane. Oh my gosh.
I have to hustle now. This is it.
Right.
So I like arrived at a crew house, which was absolutely dire. Like I did not enjoy it at all. It was all like communal living with like bunk beds with all these like wannabe yachties that were trying to look for jobs, and everyone had to share this one big bathroom. And I think I cried my eyes out for like 2 days.
Oh no.
Well, Brad, I was like, here I am, like trying, you know, like in this beautiful country, and I'm like crying, and all I wanted to do was go home. And then my parents were just like, you need a man up. So I like put my big girl panties on and was like, okay, I'm going out. I need to find a job. And I landed a job within like 2 weeks, which was like after running up and down the docks in Monaco, like handing out my resume, like, please, can I just come clean a bathroom, show you what I've got? Eventually, this yacht, it was like an 80-meter yacht with 21 crew. They employed me. And I kind of hadn't even told them I didn't have a passport. I was like, which obviously you need to travel. So
right.
Such a, like, I was like hustling hard, and they employed me. And then eventually I was like, look, I have to be honest with you. I've lost my passport. It's been taken.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, I'm never going to get this job because there's like 30 yachties, like, you know, just like me looking for a job who are right here with passports. And the captains were so wonderful. They were like, don't worry. As long as you can get a passport within 2 weeks and get back to us in Barcelona in Spain, you've got the job. So I was like on the next flight back, I had like 3 train rides to get, flew back to South Africa.
Oh my gosh.
Got a new passport, got a new visa, flew back to Spain, literally all within like 48 to 72 hours. And I landed my first job on this 80-meter yacht as like a junior stewardess. So I got very lucky, but it was a wild ride.
That is insane. Oh my gosh. I cannot even imagine the stress of that experience. Also, like landing an 80-meter, like is that like a big – that's obviously like how big the Wellington is, right?
Oh, it's bigger than the Wellington.
It's bigger.
Really?
So it's like the Wellington – I'm trying to think in feet. It must be like the Wellington like just under 200 feet, and an 80-meter is like 200 and – I'm going to sound really silly if I say this and it's not right, but it's bigger. Like the Wellington, we had 9 crew on, and this 80 meter, we had 21 crew.
Oh my gosh.
21 crew. And is it a charter? Like they're like, it's people coming for like 4 days at a time, or how does that work?
Yeah. So it was full on charter. We had people coming on for like 7 days to 14 days.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. A 2 week charter at times.
Oh my gosh, I've had like a 16 day to a month charter before.
No. Yeah. See, that's one of the things that I think is really interesting because, you know, with Below Deck and Below Deck Med, the guests are getting kind of an insane deal.
Right.
And they're kind of probably, and I'm curious about this, they're kind of probably not exactly the clientele that's legit yachting without consenting to being filmed and all of that. Is that true? Like, is it like a different echelon of people that are like the Below Deck guest charter guest stars or, and then like the real, like the regular charter guests?
I mean, it's so funny because you get very similar guests to what you get on Below Deck. You do get those.
Really?
Guests. Like, that's no joke. Like, they, you know, I think on Below Deck, the people who are willing to be filmed, they're obviously a little bit more out there because mm-hmm. a lot of people at charter yachts, you know, we sign non-disclosures mm-hmm. for, you know, what you can and can't say. And obviously, you're not allowed to say anything because a lot of these people charter these boats and it's absolute privacy. And they like to have the privacy. So, you know, it's like I always imagine myself going on a yacht and I'm like, oh my gosh, I would never want like all these crew. We see everything. So, yeah. We like unpack their bags. We like unpack their underwear. You know, we see absolutely everything. Their bathrooms, the way they keep things. So, you know, on these yachts, that's a big part of being a crew member is being very private for the guests that you kind of catering to.
Can you say what the craziest, some of like the craziest things you've seen? Obviously not saying who, like the, you know, not telling us it was like, you know,
right.
James Baldwin of, you know, of Washington yeah. or whatever.
Oh my gosh. I mean, in terms of like crazy, so I've been very lucky on all the yachts that I've worked on. I've worked for like, cause a lot of the boats you'll work for somebody who owns the yacht and then they'll charter the yacht out. Right. So sometimes you'll have the owner on and then a lot of the times it will just be like random guests like for a week or two at a time. But I've been lucky for the people, like with the people that I've worked for, they've always been like so respectful, so lovely, like really treat the crew like family.
Really?
But it's, yeah, like incredible. Like I've been super lucky. A lot of people that I've like I'm friends with who are in the industry haven't been so lucky and they've had like crazy owners that just like work them nonstop, like, you know, not like don't really want to see the crew at all. Like you actually have to be so stealthy, but like, you know, you have to not be seen. And that's kind of how I was trained when I joined the industry was like the people who charter these boats or own the boats don't want to see you. So you have to be like, and that's the funny thing. When I started as a junior stew, it was like, every time somebody went to the bathroom, we had to like sneak into the bathroom, clean it up, like refold the toilet paper like nobody had ever been in there. So that was kind of like, that's how it is, like 24/7. You have to, like, it just has to seem like no one's even touched the sink. Like there can't be any water anywhere, no mirror marks. It's crazy. But in terms of like crazy charter guests, I've had a lot. A lot of people who, you know, like party hard. I'm trying to think of like an exact story where I think like most recently I've had somebody like actually like walk up and like yell in my face and I was like up against a wall.
Oh my gosh.
And they were like, they just really didn't like the food and like just everything was just like wrong. And I've had that. So I've had very confrontational guests where, you know, they've just been very like in your face and like don't really respect the crew as much. But then I've also had some really, really fun, crazy guests that just stay up. And like a lot of people I've chatted with just love like all these wild theme nights and they go crazy all out on all their outfits. And so
oh my gosh.
A lot of what you see on the show like happens in real life with charters.
Interesting. And so like, okay, so like, when someone's like yelling in your face, like how do you even like handle that situation? Or I mean, because one of the things I think is interesting on Below Deck Med is it just seems like you guys are crazy short-staffed. Like it just seems yes. like there actually needs to be a sous chef. There probably should be another stewardess. Like it just doesn't seem like the staff fits the expectations. And right. so I'm curious, like, does that seem accurate to you? If there's like 21 crew on a boat that's like somewhat similar to the Wellington, why is there like 10 crew on the Wellington?
So like, I think it causes a lot more drama, to be honest, you know, to be short staffed. But again, it's like realistic. There's so many times you'll be like, have a crew of 15 and all of a sudden, like, someone resigns at the drop of a hat before a charter, and like then like two people decide to resign on the same day, and all of a sudden you like super short staff. Like I've done a charter before where I've had like a team of like four girls in the interior, and like just before a charter I've had to run the charter with two girls. So like it definitely, it like ups the ante and like creates so much stress and creates so much pressure. And that's like where all the fights start breaking out, where people like get irritated with one another. This person's working harder than that person. Mm-hmm. And that's where like all the drama unfolds. So I have to say, like, a lot of the time this can be like really, really realistic to what goes on the show.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. So, but do you think the show is a little bit short-staffed on purpose?
That's a hard one to say, but I will say that on the Wellington, that size of the Wellington, you usually would have a sous chef.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cause it just doesn't make sense that people can ask for whatever they want and there's one person cooking for everyone and right. they expect it to be like out and hot in 10 minutes. Like what?
All day long.
Right. And again, it's like, it completely depends on the clientele you have. Like sometimes you have very respectful guests that come on and they're like, okay, breakfast is in the morning. Okay. Breakfast is done. We're going to go out in the water now and like play in the water, like with the water sports, the jet skis. And then we all have like in the interior have time to like regroup and like plan for like lunch and then plan for dinner. But then you get these like crazy guests that just eat all day and they just want
really
much out of their charter. Mm-hmm. Possibly can, you know what I mean? They've paid for the trip, so they kind of can request whatever they want. So you do get the people that just want absolutely like food flowing all day long, drinks flowing all day long, and that's what kind of makes it difficult for like the interior and the chef to kind of, you know, stay on top of it all.
Well, that was one of the other questions I had was like, how on earth are you supposed to be doing all this stuff? And it's like, hey, we also would like a 17th century Renaissance night, you know, in the next 2 hours. Like, how does that work?
Cake.
Why? Yeah. I'm sure if you watch like on season 5 with Tom, where we were having like, we had these guests on, I can't remember which charter it was. And all of a sudden we were supposed to plan like the birthday party for the one night. And on the first night they were like, oh no, let's change and have the birthday cake tonight. And it was like 3 hours before dinner. And all of a sudden I had to go and tell Tom like, hey, you need to make a cake for tonight. And he's like, okay. And on top of doing this. And I think that's what makes like my job as a chief stewardess so hard is like, you have to be the, you know, the go-between the guests and the chef.
Oh, the messenger.
The messenger. Oh my gosh. And the amount of times, like, you know, I'm on the chef's side, obviously we're a team, but the amount of times I have to deliver this news and like make sure it like we execute it, it is so difficult because the chef like usually 100% of the time takes it out on me.
Right. Yeah. You're the punching bag. Well, this is my question is like, I think a lot of the drama that we see, like, honestly revolves around the chef. Like, do you think it's just hard to find good chefs in like the yachting industry who are just like multifaceted and can just like handle all the needs? Like, or do you think it's just like the guests are too picky all the time and, you know, it's just like a bad situation?
I mean, I think guests being picky like comes with the territory. Like,
yeah.
You know, they, and you know, especially on the show, I think obviously because a lot of the guests are being seen, I feel like a lot of the time they want to make it that much more difficult for the crew. Mm-hmm. Because they like want to see you not succeed. And I'm not saying like all of the guests, but like a lot of them, you can just tell that they're just trying to be extra difficult. I remember like even, you know, a lot, you know, how we have the preference sheet meetings.
Yeah. Right.
And someone will come on and they'll be like, yeah, I'm gluten intolerant and I'm dairy free and I'm vegan and all of this. And then like 10 cocktails later, they're like, give me a toasted cheese. And you're like, cheese, and I don't care what bread it's on. And you're like, well, aren't you gluten free? And they're like, I don't care. And all of a sudden you're like, okay, so you can tell. And the next day they go back to like, I'm not eating that Caesar salad because there's croutons in it. Dude, like what? You know what I mean? So it's such a like juggling game, and I always call it the stew face, where you just have to put that stew face on. And this is what I always like. It always seems like you're always acting a lot of the time because you just have to like go with them. And like I think that makes like a stewardess so like successful in the industry is being able to adapt. And, you know, you'll be, I think it's like very famous of like Hannah on the show, where you'll see her like smiling and then she turns around and she's like rolling her eyes.
Yeah.
Like
totally.
We all do that. So
yeah. Honestly though, you Bugsy, like I was watching it with my boyfriend this past week and he was like, the guests always call out Bugsy by name. There was like, the staff was great. Bugsy was amazing. Like your stew face and like your ability to just be like likable, like you would just vibe so well with the guests. Whereas I feel like, you know, even Hannah, like I feel like the guests could feel her energy.
Hannah, like, her energy, you can tell she's pissed off.
Right. Exactly.
Right. I mean, like, I think even on season 5, you can just see like Hannah's not, like her head's not there anymore. She's like not into it. Mm-hmm. But I think for me, I thrive. Like even when you say like, you know, you vibe off the guests, I really do. I think it's like so funny. It's almost like a game to me sometimes when the guests come on. It's kind of like, you know, how can I respond to these guys today and just keep it so like light and up there? Because essentially, you know, we as a crew are wanting like a good tip. So yeah. I feel like, you know, the more you give them and the more like you vibe off their energy, whether it's like good energy or bad energy,
right,
the more you like kill them with kindness a lot of the time, the more they eventually come around. And it's kind of fun. I always see it as like a challenge. Like, how am I going to make them like super like all the crew by the end of this? Because a lot of people go out of their way to be like super bitchy, you know, or just like be mean and try and like really knock you down. And yeah, I really see it as like a challenge. Like, I'm really going to make these people like us by the end of this trip.
That, I mean, I feel like that's like such a good way to look at it, because otherwise you could take it so personally and let your ego get involved, and then it's like you could completely spiral.
Right.
So,
but I mean, it really makes for good TV, right? When you see the stewardess like, oh my gosh, these people, because that's the truth, and that's where I kind of waited for my interviews to kind of let rip.
Okay, that's another question I had. How does the interviews work with this show? Because it's obviously like, you're obviously not, you know, like someone doesn't ask you for an espresso martini and then you like go down and do like a 10-minute interview about how annoying this is. Like, that's not going to work. So is it after the fact? And if it's after the fact, how do you drum up the emotion of like that experience? Because it does seem in the moment.
Right. So I mean, like, again, like I said, I think Below Deck is so good at capturing the real life of what yachting is. And I have to give it to the show because they really, really capture it like in all its essence. Where, you know, a lot of yachties that like aren't on the show, and I say like yachties because that's like what we call ourselves, a lot of them give the show grief because they're like, oh my gosh, it's not even like that. And I'm like, yes, it is. It's like sometimes tenfold in real life compared to the show. But like I said, like I think the reason they are able to capture it so well is that they don't like get involved with anything that we're doing. We work, we play hard, we go out like you would do on any yacht. And I think the fact that they don't interfere is what gives it so much truth. So like at the end of every charter, they'll have questions for us, and then
gotcha,
we'll kind of like go into it. And then like coming back to how we like drum up the emotion, I think it's just so ingrained in us because you're taking everything in as it's happening, because it's happening so realistically in real life. And it's just so easy to like remember, oh my gosh, this is how that guy like made me feel when he ordered 3 different espresso martinis.
I mean, it must be like almost going to therapy after and getting to like like expunge all of your emotions.
100%. It's like completely like that. And then I think when I did season two, I was like so much more afraid because I knew like, oh my gosh, these guests are going to like see this. And like, what are they going
right.
to, what are they going to say about me? Like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, say to me, are they going to come after me for being like this? But, you know, I think again, like going back to the fact that it is so well depicted, like in terms of reality. I don't know how a lot of other reality shows work, but this is true to the core of like, you know, really being able to like sponge and like let loose on how these people have kind of been behaving.
Right.
Go ahead, Jen.
I have a logistical question. Like, how many camera crew people are there, and where do they sleep? Like, I had this moment where I was like, oh, wait a second. Someone's like literally filming in this tiny, tight hallway. Like there must be a huge camera. Like how do they even function on the ship?
Okay. So I can't give away too many details
behind
the scenes, but I will,
totally.
I will tell you that like the cameraman does not sleep in my bunk bed.
Okay. That's good to know.
Right. They have a place to sleep. And yeah, there's somebody with you all the time. So,
right.
Like again, like I'll say, I have so much respect for the camera crew because, you know, can you imagine being a camera person with like a camera walking around like moving boat? Half the time we're like going through like rough seas, and you've got like me, I'm super fast like when I work. So yeah. I also felt so bad because I'm like, I'm still going to do my job just as I do it on any boat. And like half the time I'm like shoving past the camera person and they're like, oh my gosh, here comes Bug. She's like a tornado ripping through. And they have to like get there, you know, to be in line to capture everything that's going on. So hats off to them. They've got a great, like, you know, they're really good at their jobs.
Yeah.
You don't have to answer this if you can't, but, and this is a random question, but does the chef feed them too?
No, the chef doesn't feed the camera crew.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Okay.
No, the chef like is, you know, a yacht chef. So they kind of cater to the guests and the crew, like the actual crew.
Like, right. Cause the chef has to make food for the crew too, right?
Yeah. That's what makes their job so hard. And like I was saying, like on the Wellington, like I've worked on a boat again, as I was saying, like you would typically have a sous chef on that size, but then there are boats that just like, no, it's not in our budget too. So that chef like will have to take on the meals for all the crew and whatnot. But if you do happen to have a sous chef, they'll do like the crew food.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense.
Here's my other question about that. Like, does your tip, like, is there any incentive to just, you know, keep the crew a little bit smaller so that your tips are bigger? Or do you feel like the tips really do scale?
I mean, I think if you've got, so like the tips are like predominantly in the industry and like even on the show all like shared equally. But what are like with regards to keeping the crew smaller, I think if you've got like a really, I know a lot of boats that have like very tight knit crew that just kind of do a little bit of everyone's jobs and then they come off with a better tip because it's shared equally.
Right.
But for the most part, like in terms of like marine law and all that, you have to have a certain like manning requirement on the yacht. So you have to have a certain amount of crew.
Right.
Gotcha. Right. Wait, I have a question kind of going back to the guests. Have you ever heard of, or have you ever experienced like a guest seeing the show, seeing when one of the cast members basically called them like trashy, or like made fun of them and like getting mad and like DMing that person or anything like that?
I have firsthand experience of receiving that.
No. Wait, can you tell us about it?
Lauren, I am starting to get back into a routine of binging shows, and some of these shows are a little dark, a little intense, and I got to take the edge off, frankly. So you might find
she does.
Yeah. You might find me getting into a bottle of Pinot Noir from Spade and Sparrows.
You know, honestly, whatever helps, baby. Binging two things at once. I love it.
Right.
I am a beverage enthusiast, and this definitely includes wine, definitely includes Spade and Sparrows. I love Spade and Sparrows because not only does it taste delicious, but it looks so cute on my counter. Like the labels are darling.
Right. I actually feel like when I leave it out, it's kind of like a flex, you know? It's totally. Like, oh, those are my products. My products look nice. I'm better than you. I'm an elite. My coastal elite with my Spade and Sparrows.
For sure. Yeah, it's a design flex, and it's also a delicious, delicious wine made by women for women. Love it so much. Truly, you guys, it's delicious. You need to get some. It's one of my faves. You'll feel good with it on your countertop. You'll feel good with it in your belly.
True.
Spade and Sparrows is available online in the US and Canada. It's also now available in select liquor stores across Canada, including recently launched at the LCBO in Ontario, as well as select Walmarts in California. Shop online or in-store. Go to www.spadeandsparrows.com to find your closest bottle.
It's the best.
It was, I think it was on season two. It wasn't the most recent season, but there was like someone, I made like a comment. I cannot even remember the comment, but he came back and was like, oh my gosh, how could you say this about me? This is not correct. Like, this is not who I am. And I'm like, okay, dude, like, you were the one who chose to portray yourself that way, whether it's you or not. I was just commenting on what was realistically happening.
Right.
And how you made me feel.
Okay, well, I kind of like speaking to that, speaking to like a guest or a cast member being able to witness their own behavior and then maybe learn from that and own up to it. One of the most fascinating things for me was, you know, Hannah acted really egregiously, in my opinion, on season two. And she really slacked off from what I could see. Obviously, I'm not there. But if the show was real or a true account, then yeah. You know, there were some huge issues with her management and her, you know, her slacking off and all of that. And I kind of thought, okay, the 3 years or a lot of time is going to go by between season two and season five. She's going to see that behavior. She's probably going to apologize to Bugsy, you know, and have like, you know, I like learned from it. So I thought it was so interesting when she had not at all learned from her behavior, not at all taken any ownership, still held a grudge against you for calling her out. I mean, was that all totally real? Or was that like, I don't know, I'm just so fascinated by this Hannah situation.
Yeah, 100%. I think like, I've said it before, but in a way, I kind of regret it. So I worked as a chief stew before I worked as her second stew on season two. So, and like, I know a lot of people hear it. Oh, when I was chief stew, like that was a lot in all my interviews. But I think that was like a hard thing for her, like me coming in, and I'm quite like a strong character and know how to do my job. That was all realistic the way it played out. Mm-hmm. I think for me, you know, I don't like confrontation. Like if it's not necessary. But it just went too far with Hannah, and I felt like she was taking the piss a lot on season two. And, you know, she just kind of slacked off a lot. And then there was the whole thing with the charter guest and the iPad and all of that. And I was just like, this is so unprofessional, and this does not happen. And I was like, if I'm going to leave the season, like, without saying something to her, like, for my own character, I'm going to be like, you know, I'm not going to feel good about it because – you know, I really do, like you're saying, I think people need to learn from their mistakes. And I've kind of always had that mentality. Like if somebody feels like I'm not like pulling my weight or doing something, I'd prefer them come and tell me to my face. So I actually like realize where I can kind of, you know, like step up to the plate and correct whatever I'm doing wrong. But that whole thing between Hannah and I, like full on real, continued, you know, when I came back on season five, you saw her face when Sandy announced I was coming back. She was just like, oh my God. Like that for me, you know, like, was one of the funniest parts in the whole of Below Deck, like history that I've ever seen was Hannah's face when she heard I was coming back.
Well, she was kind of like the anti-Adam. Like Adam came back, knew that he had really screwed up with the onion situation, with Onion Gate, and really wanted to prove himself like that he could do it, that he was going to, like, mm-hmm. He did the opposite. He took ownership and really excelled, but Hannah just seemed to like do the complete opposite of Adam, just like spiral continually, never get any better, just get continually worse. And this brings me to two questions. Oh, sorry, Chen, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I feel like, get continually worse, but also her ego continued to just like get inflated as well as her experience grew. And so it was just like this terrible situation.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Question for you. Do you remember, like, can you just tell us how you were feeling during the Onion situation? Because that's probably some of the best television I've ever seen in my life.
Yes.
So, like, during which part? Like, when it actually happened, when Adam was, like, doing that, or...
Yeah, like, okay, so for our listeners who haven't watched the show, so the chef purposefully puts onions into the food of guests who have specifically called out that they do not want onions. And the chef does it once, and the people get mad, and then he does it again the next day on purpose. And it's like, I mean, to me, it's the biggest kind of F you, so disrespectful, would be so infuriating if this guy was like, if I was having to work with this guy. So I'm curious how you felt in the moment.
So it's like funny because I remember like thinking, this has got to be a joke, right? Like he didn't actually do that. And I was like, I'm pretty sure he's just like joking. Like I really never really, I never thought that a chef could go out of their way to be so spiteful. So like kind of when he's like, yeah, put onions in there, I was like, oh no, he's definitely joking. And then watching it back, I was horrified. I was kind of like, what in the world is like going on here? Like what kind of person does that? But then when he was doing it, I remember like, because it wasn't my place, like I wasn't the chief stew, and I kept trying to like hone myself back because I'm like, okay, remember Hannah's the chief stew. She's got to deal with this. Right. I remember kind of like saying to her, yeah, like I think he just did that, and kind of left it to her to kind of sort out between him and her. But I was definitely horrified. And I did think in the beginning it had to be a joke. I was like, there's no way this guy's like literally gone out and been so spiteful.
I mean, okay, so this actually brings me to another question. And I think maybe it was actually more stressful to watch, like you said, to watch it back, because you can actually see him doing it on purpose and like mincing the onions before they go into the soup. Yeah. Like, it's not like, obviously, when you're in the moment, you're like running around doing other stuff. But this brings me to another question, which is like, obviously, Adam comes back after that. And then Hannah also gets continually rehired. And do you feel like Captain Sandy actually hired them back, or like hired Hannah back? Or do you, especially after Hannah's, you know, like lack of performance? Or do you feel like it was a casting decision and that's why Hannah came back so many times?
To be honest, I don't really know the ins and outs of that. But like what I will say is like, you know, I know Sandy in the way that I think, you know, on personal accounts where we've talked about certain situations, she's always one to give a second chance.
Okay. And,
like, I kind of felt like she kept like having so much like, just kept having faith in Hannah to maybe like step up her game. Mm-hmm. And I kind of feel like she just kept giving her the chance to be like, come on, Hannah, like just show them what you've got. Come on. Mm-hmm. And because I know that's in Sandy's character. She always wants to like pull out the best in people. And I think by season 5, she's just like, look, I can't anymore. Like, I just can't.
I mean, like watching Captain Sandy's journey from season 2 to season 5 is like watching like an 18-year-old on the dating scene versus like a 40-year-old on the dating scene. Like just the amount of like, she becomes so jaded. She becomes like so incredibly callous and like, and such a more, is so filled with like intensity and so much more of a boss in certain ways.
Right.
And that was really interesting to witness.
I mean, but I'm obsessed with it though. Like I'm obsessed with
Captain Sandy
though. Like throughout, I mean, she does become a little bit more, she just becomes more stern. I feel like she just doesn't take as much like shit from everybody. Yeah. But she's like, I mean, I just want to know, like you obviously have a personal relationship with her. Like what is she like? She's so phenomenal.
We're obsessed with her. Like we would literally go to her church if she started a religion.
Yes.
I absolutely love that. I think Sandy is like such a boss, you know, like I know a lot of the time, you know, people see her in different lights on the show because you can't show everything all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, she is such a badass. And like you say, going from season 2 to season 5, her character development is so crazy. You know, I think she, when you're a captain, you kind of employ people to kind of know what they're doing. So I think in the beginning, she's like, okay, I'm going to have my crew. I'm just going to like let them all be. And I think as the seasons rolled in, and again, like truthful to yachting, you get a lot of people that maybe a lot of the time don't have the experience that they say they do. And like, she's got to put up with it and train them and show them. But for the most part, I can just say she is a very like kind and supportive person. If you're willing to give her your time, and if you're willing to like kind of, accept what she's got to say to you.
Yeah. I mean, to watch, she just seems like such a strong person with so much integrity and such a good, kind person that like sees the best in people, wants them to succeed. She's just so like sincere.
Right.
And I don't know, just honestly, like seems like such a good human being. But it was funny and kind of sad to see like the way that she maybe like had less faith in yacht crews during season 5, at least, than during season 2 for sure.
Right. And I think also like, you know, I think she means well. And a lot of the time, like people don't really get her sense of humor. She's got like a really wacky sense of humor. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. She's like, she's so funny. She's like, as much as she's like a very, like, she's a phenomenal captain and a lot of the time, and she like does her job well, but she's also got like a very like childlike side to her where she just like likes to have fun and loves a good laugh. And I think sometimes people see, like, not a lot of people can understand that side of her. So I think that's where, you know, sometimes it doesn't come across as well as it should on camera. And I think, you know, she got a lot of slack for when she let Hannah go on season 5. So I felt bad for her because she means well and she's just doing her job.
But isn't she just like abiding by maritime law?
Also, yeah. That seemed to me like such a clear cut situation where she had given, also like leading up to it, she'd given Hannah so many chances to like prove herself. And then she just, and then, you know, there was this like serious issue that Hannah clearly didn't care about, or, you know, she couldn't prove that she had a prescription for the Valium or anything. It just seems super clear cut to me. It's sad that she got a lot of hate for that.
For sure. I mean, like, that's what I think a lot of viewers don't understand. Like, it's, we are filming realistically what goes on. And in like maritime law with yachts, there are these certain procedures and certain laws you have to follow. But I think like maybe where it like didn't come off so well when she had the sit down and how it all unfolded was, you know, on top of the fact that she had to do a job and like you can't have somebody on a yacht like dealing with these high-end guests and dealing with the crew. It's like our safety too. You can't have somebody like, you know, not 100% like, with it, you know, even prescribed medication. And I'm a huge, I'm a huge advocate for mental health. And I know a lot of people that obviously take meds, like the yachting industry doesn't discriminate, you know, if you have mental health issues or anything, but it's like she said, like as long as you go and report it to the captain so that they are aware and they can monitor the person's safety as well as the crew and the guests.
Yeah.
Like her delivery of, you know, letting Hannah go didn't come off as well to viewers, but just because of the fact that she had been dealing with Hannah for so long and there was a lot of like emotion involved in just like how much time she'd given Hannah and like how it in a way had just kind of been thrown back in her face.
Well, and this wasn't like the third stew or anything. Like this was her chief stew.
Right. Which is someone that you want to have like, you know, 100% like faith in.
Right. And trust. Right. Yeah.
You kind of follow the rules of yachting.
That was another thing that I like, another kind of relationship that I thought was interesting, almost because like Captain Sandy, she really like the buck stops with her. And if the dinner isn't good, she acts like she's going to get in trouble. That's like the level of panic I feel like Captain Sandy has when something doesn't go well with the interior. And so I thought I would have a question for you. Like, is the captain the one who honestly gets in trouble if a bunch of charter guests have bad experiences? Is that why she gets all freaked out?
Oh, for sure. I mean, like the crew reflects like on the captain, right? So like the captain's the head of the ship, obviously. So they kind of, everything, the buck stops with them. Like you say with Sandy, it's kind of like it, all the complaints are going to go to the captain about the crew, because they're the ones who are solely responsible for the way that their crew like behave and how they treat the guests and how the food is. So yeah, it's a huge responsibility on her shoulders. That's why it's like so important for captains to have like crew who know what they're doing and take pride in what they do.
I just feel like nothing makes me sweat more than when the guests are cutting into their steak and Captain Sandy is just like, you know, feet away, just like waiting with bated breath for them to say that it's good or not. And then she'll walk back into the interior, like they love the food, or she'll be like, the steak's undercooked. Like you need to cook it again. Like that is the most stressful moment of every charter for me.
100%. And I think it brings so much drama. Like I will say though, that Sandy is one of the first captains I've ever seen that like lingers around the guests when they haven't. But I think it brings so much so much stress to the whole and drama to the whole thing. Because when I watch it back too, I'm like also like watching Sandy's face as they're cutting in. And, oh my gosh.
So funny. The question I was going to ask is, like, let's say there are a bunch of complaints. It's not like the owner of the yacht is going to get mad at the chief stew and be like, well, the boat was driven safely. So the captain, I'm not mad at the captain. I'm mad at the chief stew. Is it a situation where essentially like the only person they're in contact with is the captain? So the captain takes all the flack at the end of the day too.
I mean, for sure. But I think a lot of the time, like I've been in situations where like there's been a complaint about the chef. And it's all been about the chef's food, or it's been like the service from the interior and the, you know, the stewardesses haven't been like up to scratch. Then a lot of the time they'll be like, look, captain, it's not you. It's, you know, the food, which is predominantly the chef, or it's the service, which are the girls, or, you know, none of the water toys, like the jet ski's broken. And then it like falls on the chief officer on the deck side of things. So There definitely is accountability for various heads of department. But like, you know, if it's like an all rounded trip where just like everything's going wrong, it will like eventually fall on the captain.
Gotcha. Another question I have is you guys work nonstop, like for days on end on these charters, and then you guys dock, they're done, you clean up the boat, and then you go to the club and start partying. And my question is, are you guys all on cocaine? Like, how is that possible? Chandler and I would need to be like in a vegetative state for at least 24 hours to recuperate and recover. Like, how do you guys
like
do that?
Like an IV drip.
I think that should be mandatory to have an IV drip on all boats. 100%. Like I could definitely do with that. I think, you know, for the crew, it's like we all get our nap in straight after we've cleaned the boat. We get a quick nap in, and then we're like, it's our only shot at freedom. Like we have to go out and like
drink
a bottle of wine each or whatever to kind of, but I will say the hangover the next day is not ideal, especially when you have to flip the boat. And I think that was one of the things I learned. I have like so much strength in like working with a hangover from doing Below Deck, especially season 5, because I have never been so blackout. Like in terms of like when we went to the one club, I think you saw when I was in the hot tub with Alex, I was like so blackout. And I was like the next day I said to the producers, I was like, I have never been that blackout in my life. And to have that even captured on camera, like that is like the biggest sense of scaries I've ever had.
You were great. Honestly, it was just like adorable. Like you guys being in the jacuzzi, that was ice cold. And Malia was like, you know, it's cold, right?
Yeah. I mean, did you see my outfit? I was like, what on earth possessed me to wear that? I was literally wearing like a full one piece with like high waisted striped shorts. I was like, I call the fashion police after I saw that. Everyone's like, you might have worn a like cute bikini. You're like on TV. I'm like, I don't know what, but I like opt for like the biggest like grandma look out there. Oh
my gosh.
And I'm like, I'm with Alex, right? So it's like you're trying to impress a cute guy and you're like going full out in the grandma like swimsuit section.
Oh my gosh. Okay, another question I have, and this might be something, and we can edit out whatever. So if you're like, oh, I shouldn't have said that, or I don't want to talk about this, we can just edit it out. So no pressure. But I'm super curious, what's the money situation like? Like if you're a stewardess, if you're like, how, like, if, like, what's the normal amount of seasons to do a year? Like a season is 6 weeks, right?
So a season, like if, like obviously again, because Below Deck, you know, you have to shoot it like in such a short time. Because otherwise it would just go on forever and ever and ever. But an actual yachting season would be for the Caribbean would start like, let's say October-ish and go all the way through to like February.
Mm-hmm.
And then like the Mediterranean season predominantly starts like May, June and goes all the way through like the summer into like maybe September.
Oh, wow.
So I'm looking at a good solid couple of months. And like depending on what yacht you're on, like if you have like back-to-back charters, the money is like so good because you're just like nonstop getting tipped.
Right.
You know, a lot of people opt to just work for private yachts where they only work for the owner. And a lot of the times they just make their standard salary and don't necessarily get tipped. Some owners are very generous and do tip their crew. But I would say like if you're on a good like charter yacht and you do like a full mid season, you can make bank, like serious bank.
Like what serious bank?
Like I would say coming out of a good Mediterranean season, you could like with your salary and everything, you could walk away with like 50K.
50K.
Wow.
That's amazing. Gosh. That's insane.
And I'm only giving you like an average, you know what I
yeah.
mean? Like
yeah,
you
can make right.
More or less, but I'm going to say like 50K for a couple of months, like back-to-back charters, like whatever you can, yeah, you can do well.
So theoretically you could do two of those a year and then have like also like 4 to 5 months off a year as well.
For sure. And I think that's like what's becoming very popular in the yachting industry is, you know, there's very, I think it's like it's really rare to get like a very solid good crew, especially because like an owner who owns a boat, they want to have the best crew in the industry if they're going to charter it because it makes people want to charter their boat more. So a lot of owners that you know have a solid good crew have started like implementing like a rotation where people will like work 3 months on and get 1 month off paid.
Wow. Just so they can keep them to know that they're going to come back.
Just so they can keep them like, and you know, and then like, that's where you get like a lot of longevity with crew. They'll like stay on for like 3-4 years, work their way from like junior stewardess to chief stewardess or junior like deckhand to captain. So there's a lot of good incentives out there for yacht crew these days.
This wow. is literally making me want to leave corporate America like tomorrow.
Oh, 100%. But I will say that like there are definitely like cons, like in terms of like pros and cons. Like I would say the cons are like you don't really have a very like sustainable, stable lifestyle. Like yeah. if you're going to be doing that, so you have to really kind of see what you want out of life and out of yachting, because mm-hmm. if you don't like get on a rotational boat, you're like on the yacht like moving from country to country or like across like the Atlantic twice a year for the Med or the Caribbean season, and you don't get to see your family, you don't necessarily, you know, have a solid friend group, you know, if you're looking to settle down, get married and have kids, it's not always so viable.
Right.
So
right.
There are definitely pros and cons to it.
There's not like maternity leave for like people in the yachting industry.
The chiefs too.
Yeah.
Right. No, I mean, yeah, it's all about what you want. That's yeah. why right now I've like taken the break to do my book and like pursue something that I'm passionate about. And then like at some point, if I want to get back on a boat, like, which I probably will, like I'll go and do that.
Okay. Yeah. That was one of our listener questions was like, will you return like to Below Deck if you can?
So like, at the moment, I'm just taking a bit of a break.
Yeah.
Like, obviously to focus on my book, but you know, if the opportunity came up, like for sure, like absolutely love Below Deck, love the whole mm-hmm. thing going on, and that's why I think why I'm so like drawn to the show, like a lot of yachties will be like, oh no, if you go on that show it's not good for your career, It's kind of like, because a lot of people think it's just so much drama and they don't necessarily want crew on their boat that just want to be on a reality show. But the reason I like would definitely do it again is just the fact that I do. I think it's so realistic to what it is. And I think in a way, it kind of gives the rest of the world an idea into this world that, you know, I didn't even know a lot about. And now like a lot of my friends and family can watch it and be like, oh, that's what you do. And you're like, yeah, now you can see my work.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to watch. And I am kind of dying to know, like, who do you still hang with? Who are you still like good friends with from your seasons?
So like, obviously Sandy, like I got her to write the forward of my book. So her and I are very close. And like, she's a massive inspiration to me, just because I think she's a great leader. And then I still hang with Alex, Malia, still keep in touch with Jess, Rob, who else? Like, I've spoken to Kiko. I think everyone on the show, that Aisha, I still speak to every now and then. You know, it's like the yachting world. Like, you meet these people, they become your family for like however long you work with them, and then you always remain in touch, which is cool. Even if you don't see them for like a year or two, like, you just pick up where you left off.
Right. And it's like you guys have been to war together a little bit. So it's right. Like,
well, we go through so much together.
So much.
Yeah.
That's such a good metaphor for it, Chan, because I do feel like it's probably like, even if you saw that person in 20 years, you'd be like, oh my gosh, do you remember when they complained about the asparagus? Like, I just feel like it's like so many strong memories.
Right.
For sure. And then you like bump into guests like out. Like, I know Alex saw a bunch of the charter guests at Atlantis and he phoned me up and he's like, you'll never guess who I was just with. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Yeah. So it's really
Alex
funny.
Was the best. He was like so great.
He's awesome and he's so funny.
Someone wanted to know how, and for, I'm just going to assume this is like basically you can't, but someone wants to know how you maintain a healthy lifestyle or fitness routine on board.
How do you take your yoga classes still on board?
Yeah. I mean, like, to be honest with you, like, sometimes when you docked, like, if we're like at dock, which is, you know, you in a port for a certain amount of time, I'm a big runner, so I love running, and if I get the chance to do it, some yachts actually have gyms on board where the owners let the crew use the gym, which is a big plus.
Wow.
Because I also feel like yachting is also, in a way, it's quite a superficial industry in the fact that they like the crew to look good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have like crew that are in shape, looking good. There's also, I get a lot of my fitness in with the steps that I run up and down to surf.
Yeah,
so
totally.
I always call that like my charter fitness, because I can run as much as I want and go to the gym and whatnot and then get back on a yacht and be like, oh my gosh, I'm so out of charter shape, because it's like a
different
fitness. And like, my knees kill me when I'm up and down those stairs so much.
Right.
Because you are like, I have a Garmin that tracks my steps, and I'm doing like thousands of steps a day. I'm just like,
yeah. Like, what's the number of steps on like a busy charter per day?
I've done like 12,000.
Oh my gosh. That's, especially given what tight quarters it is. That's really like back and forth.
I don't even know if 12,000 is a lot, to be honest, but like, I think it is.
Yeah. It's a lot. It's totally,
it's a lot.
Yeah.
I can sometimes do 12,000 because it's in such a small confined space as well. But like, especially for like a service, like a lot of the boats I've worked on, we have these things called dumb waiters. Like, they like those elevators that you can put.
Oh yeah. You like pull like a pulley system.
Right. Pretty much. So you can send like the food up to the top deck, but I'm such a like intense chief stew with the girls. I'm like, we are not using that. We're using the stairs. Like 100%. We need to fit in these squats and we need to look good. So we're using the stairs.
Oh my gosh. Okay. A few more questions. Someone wants to know, what does the chief engineer and first mate do all day?
So I know below deck doesn't show them as much as like they like perform very like vital roles on the boat. Like, without it, without a chief engineer and a chief officer, you basically, the boat can't move. So you know, I think a lot of, I think a reason they don't show the engineer as much is because a lot of the time they're doing behind the scenes work where they're like sitting down in the engine room, making sure the engines are running. Whenever the boat has to move, the captain gets the engineer to start up the engines and then they kind of maintain them, make sure everything's running smoothly. They also get called on when the lights are out, like if a bulb's out, and have to come and do all the like nitty gritty interior work, which they get so irritated with, like for the chief stew's like, oh, the toilet's broken again. Can you come fix it? So they literally have like a wide spectrum of like making sure this multi-million dollar yacht is working to like fixing a broken toilet. Like they do everything. And then the chief officer is like pretty much
behind
the captain. No. I was just going to say the chief officer, yeah, pretty much does like all the chart work of where the boat's going to go. And like a lot of the time maintains like all the health and safety on board and does all the, you know, behind the scenes stuff with maritime law.
Well, that's what, yeah, that's
the yoga classes with the crew. He leads yoga.
And that.
It was just interesting because when Captain Sandy let go of Hannah, like she had pulled the first officer up who had like never seen before on the season. To like witness the whole thing and make sure, you know, it was going right.
Right. So like, yeah, the first officer will be like very heavily involved. Like they also get very involved in like drug tests on board. And because we have like a zero tolerance on the boat, like in terms of when we're working with guests and all of that, like there's zero tolerance for like drugs and alcohol. And like, which sounds a bit crazy because the crew all go out and drink, but that's technically like off the yacht. The minute you bring it on the yacht is where there's a problem.
Yeah.
Wait, but not alcohol, right? There's like, they drink on board.
I mean, like technically, like I cannot be like on the job drinking.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Right. But like the guests are allowed to drink.
Oh, yeah. The guests. Sorry. I'm just meaning predominantly the crew. Like we have like zero tolerance with that.
Yeah. Do you also, really quick question, like, but I would be surprised if guests didn't try to bring on drugs on board. For these long days of partying, like how do you guys navigate that?
For sure. I mean, there are boats that like I've been on where like guests have had drugs on board. And again, like I've had captains that abide by the law like completely where I've kind of had to go and tell them, look, this is the situation. And they've like ended a charter and kicked the guests off. Because at the end of the day, again, it comes down to their license. Mm-hmm. So like you can be stopped by like the maritime like police like on the water. Or the Coast Guard or whatever, and they come on board the boat and they find like drugs and whatnot, the boat will get like seized and then the captain can have their license taken away.
So that's like their entire career.
100%. That's why it's such a serious thing.
So when Captain Sandy is literally being filmed for a television show, she's not going to like let drugs go by and then have documentation of her, something that could like basically get her license taken away. Like that's insane that people, I guess people just don't understand that.
But I think also like I know there was like this huge thing that came out about the Hannah's situation was because everyone was like, well, you know, like Valium isn't a drug. It's like a prescribed medication for mental health, which yes, like 100% you're allowed to have prescribed medication on board. Like I'm talking more, you know, as long as it's reported and it's not like popping pills in their cabins, like without anyone knowing, because it kind of, you know, can make you super disorientated when you're working. Mm-hmm. Put people at risk if there's a fire or an emergency and then they can't like 100% like act on the emergency. But it's more so like people, like I've had experience with people having cocaine on boats and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That's completely like illegal.
Okay, so that's different.
Right.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I just want to talk to you and hear about creating your book, the experience of creating it. It's called The Art of Tablescaping, Deck Out Your Table with the Queen of Theme, which we have seen so much on Below Deck Med. Your tables are truly stunning.
Yes.
I would love to hear about this, like how you got the idea to create it and more about the book.
Thank you. I mean, like I love it because I'm like, I'm the self-proclaimed queen of theme, right? So people are like, oh, I love the way she calls herself queen of theme, but I love it. And I think just, you know, my mom owns a boutique wedding venue. So I've kind of grown up around like my mom who's creative and whatnot. And ever since I realized that I could create these experiences on boats for guests, and a lot of people love to go all out, like guests, they come on and request these wild and crazy themes. I've kind of like just had such a passion for it. And, you know, they focus a a lot on it, and Below Deck made season 5. I think more so than any of the previous seasons, they focused a lot on like the table decor and like just all the, you know, they always touch on it, but I think there was a lot of it on the season I was on. And it like sparked a huge interest with a lot of the fans of the show. People reaching out to me with questions and ideas and tips and tricks and all of that. And I had a lot of requests, like if I could put it into a book. So I kind of was like, you know what, this is a fun passion project that I would love to kind of execute. And I went like balls to the walls with it and was like, I'm going to shoot this book and get it out there.
I cannot fathom how you found the time to do all of this in the midst of how hard you work and how much you work. But I think it's so amazing because truly the tables look gorgeous. And I'm curious, like, is all that stuff just on board already? Like, do you have to bring like a suitcase full of like decor? Like, how does that work?
So like so many people ask me, Jan, like I always like kind of relate, like what's the word? Not relate, like like I always see myself as the Mary Poppins, right? Yes. You just imagine like this person going around with this big bag of decor. But a lot of the time, obviously, the decor is on the yacht. So like I'll get a budget from the owner, or if charter guests are coming, they'll say, oh, we want to do this. Could you buy us a whole lot of costumes? And that will come, like they'll pay for it. But, you know, I keep boxes, especially being like on a busy charter boat. I keep like labeled boxes with just lots of decor that can kind of be, I love to repurpose items. So anything that can kind of be used for like a Gatsby party could then also be like repurposed into like a glitzy Hollywood party. So I love to, because we don't have a lot of storage on the boat, it's literally like tiny, and you have to find creative ways of like shoving decor into different cupboards or into like different boxes and all of that. So, you know, you do have a budget like every year if you work on a boat for a long time that you can kind of like add to the decor as you go. And then I just like to have my like standard themes on board because charter guests are always requesting these different themes. So I have like my staple go-tos with candles and like fairy lights and all of that. And then I love to also just kind of find like fun objects. If we're in the Bahamas, like get the deck crew to go out and like get me a whole lot of sand that I can incorporate, or shells, or even like driftwood and sticks and foliage, and like just use stuff that we've got around to make it really fun.
What's your favorite theme that you've done, or craziest, or hardest,
or both? All of
them. Yeah, all of it.
I did like a really cool theme in Saint-Tropez. It was like in the middle of summer. And I did this massive like blue and white theme, and I ordered 2 huge ice sculptures. They were like massive, to like put like bottles of Dom Perignon in. So they like sat in the ice sculptures. And then I had this massive like curtain, which was made out of real orchids, and the orchids were like dyed like blue. So they were like blue and white orchid, like curtain all the way over the sun deck. So people had to walk through it. And then these ice sculptures, I actually had to, it was such a shambles because I didn't anticipate how big they were. And we literally could not get them on the boat. Like the deck crew were like, these things are so heavy. And I had to outsource a crane to like come into the tiny Saint-Tropez port and crane these ice sculptures on.
As they're like melting.
Oh my gosh.
It was literally in the middle of summer. So they were melting like by the
sea. Oh my gosh.
And the boy, like all the deck crew looking at me like, are you insane? Like, what is wrong with you? Like getting these things on. And like, by the time they were on board, they were like so small and there was just water everywhere. So like,
oh my God,
from like a frozen ice sculpture party into like a water soiree.
I mean, also this is on top of all the other stuff you have to do, like the other interior task. It's just, it's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, you have to juggle, like you have to wear so many different hats like on board. And then another really fun one, I even write about it in my book, but I found this like really old propeller, like from a boat that had been like discarded. And I was like, oh my gosh, that would actually make for a really fun centerpiece. And so like, I went and said to the boys, could you bring this propeller on? And I was like, hey, that's pretty big. And they were like, are you crazy? Like, what is wrong with you? And I was like, well, it's gonna like, it's a shock factor, right? So I always think it's so cool to bring something on like that with the boat. And then the guests are all like, what?
Right.
And so I put this, I cleaned it up and then put this massive propeller in the middle of the table and then like decorated around it. And everyone was like, whoa, this is crazy. But that was also definitely a big, a different like sort of thing that I'd done.
So do you carry so the rough. Propeller around with you from charter to charter?
Oh no. Oh no. I was like, I have to get this thing right off after. It like lived in my cabin. It was like my extra cabin.
Oh.
I was like, everyone who came into my cabin, I'm like, just be careful you don't cut your leg open on that thing.
Oh my gosh, that is dedication. Thank you so much for coming on. This has been so fun and truly like a dream come true for us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast. I've really, really loved it. You guys are great.
You're incredible. Aww, we're very lucky to have had you on.
Aww, thank you so much.
Bugsy, tell everyone where to find you, what's happening with your book, when they can expect it, all the things.
Okay, perfect. So you can follow me on Instagram, which is just Bugsy Drake, very simple. I'm on Twitter too, where I speak a lot about my book. And then my book is pretty much out on any like online bookstore, Amazon, Target, Barnes & Noble, on my own website, which is bugsydrake.com. And it's officially out on May the 4th.
Oh my gosh, like literally tomorrow.
Pretty much. May the 4th with you.
Congratulations. Yay.
So exciting. Just for listeners again, it's called The Art of Tablescaping. Deck out your table with the queen of theme.
Bugsy, we're obsessed. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Truly, thank you.
Thanks for having me, girls.
That's all for now, folks. Don't forget, give us a 5-star review, hit us up on Instagram at Pop Apologists, and we will see you next week, live every Wednesday.